Once upon a time, the devil was going for a walk with one of his friends. Now, I can't imagine the devil even having friends, but bear with me here with my story. And as they're walking down the road, this person in front of them picks something up off the road. And the friend says, what did that person pick up off the road? And the devil said, he picked up a piece of the truth. The friend said, doesn't it bother you that he has a piece of the truth? Oh no, said the devil, that doesn't bother me. I will allow him to have a piece of the truth, and then he'll make a religious belief out of it. I think the devil is a master at allowing you and I to have a piece of the truth, and then you and I making a religious belief or dogma out of it. For example, the portrait of Jesus as this nice, soft, sweet, benign marshmallow of a person who demands absolutely nothing. We kind of like that Jesus a little bit. But if that's your portrait of who Jesus is, what on earth do you do with the gospel today where Jesus says, I have come to light the world on fire, and how I wish it were blazing. I have come not to bring peace. I have come to bring division. So here today, Jesus is a very demanding individual. As a matter of fact, Jesus generated in his life a lot of hostility. More than once in the gospel, if you remember, they said, we need to kill this guy. We got to get rid of him. It was very difficult, if possible, to be indifferent about Jesus. Either you were for him, or you were against him. And so it seems to me that it follows that a Christian should somehow generate a certain amount of hostility too. I'm not talking about the hostility generated by the clergy skin. I'm not talking about that kind of a thing. I'm not talking about the hostility or the contempt that's generated out there in the world by our mediocre or lukewarm living of the gospel. I'm talking about that kind of hostility. I'm saying if you and I cast our lots for Jesus, and somehow, some way, you are going to cause some division in, or maybe some hostility in your world and maybe in your family. But I don't want to go into all this here today so much, but you know, whenever I had my conversion back in my 20s or my awakening to a life of faith back in my 20s, it caused a tremendous amount of division and hostility in my family in a lot of ways. And I grew up in a very nominally Catholic family. And so that put a real spoke into the wheel of my family. And everybody, and still to this day, has had to make a choice of where they are going to go or where are they going to stand. And it was very important for me that all that didn't happen in Pittsburgh. I'm not sure back in my 20s if I would have had the stamina to stand up to the pressure to conform to my family as opposed to somehow finding my own way, you know, to kind of fit into the Bagley box of what you're supposed to be like as opposed to being a follower of Jesus Christ. But what I'd like to do this morning, though, is tell you a story of someone who did put his lot in with Jesus, this Lord of division. And in August 9th, 1943, the Nazis beheaded this Austrian peasant. He wasn't a spy. He wasn't a saboteur. He wasn't involved with any plots to kill Hitler at all. He maybe had an eighth grade education, had a wife, three kids. Pretty much, folks, he was a nobody in the scheme of things, but he was a believer. And he was a follower of Jesus Christ. His name was Franz Jägerstätter. And you may wonder, how could this nobody, this very ordinary citizen, be a remarkable threat to the state, a threat to the Nazi cause? How can this very ordinary guy cause so much remarkable division? And it's very simple. He opposed the Nazi regime, and he believed they were completely wrong. When it came to the referendum, which was unanimously voted for, he voted no for the referendum that would ratify the Nazis taking over Austria. And people noticed. They saw what he did, and now he was different because of that. He refused to be involved in any way, shape, or form in the Nazi now-run government. When it came to time to be drafted into the military, he refused to go, even though he knew that this was the penalty for that was death. He languished in prison for a few months, and then eventually they just simply chopped off his head. But how could this young man, in the midst of all of this was going on, cause so much remarkable division? His pastor reminded him and advised him to take a look at the duty to his country and to his family. His bishop thought him sincere, but very, very wrong. As a matter of fact, when the war was over, the bishop did not allow any articles about Franz Jägerstätter to be written in the diocesan newspaper because he was afraid it might disturb and confuse the conscience of the people. They needed their consciences confused and disturbed in some way. And his own people of his village were very, very much divided about him. There's no doubt about it. Franz Jägerstätter stood alone in his opposition to the Nazis. To this very day, there is a monument in his village for the 56 Catholics who died in military service supporting the Nazi cause. There is nothing in the village to Franz Jägerstätter, even though his cause to be canonized as saint has been introduced into the church. There is one person, however, who recognized the heroism of this person, and he was the German chaplain in the prison where he was held in Berlin. And that evening, the day he was executed at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. That evening he was having dinner with these Austrian nuns who happened to be living in Berlin at that time. And he told them that he met this person, that it was the joy in this person's face was just, in his eyes were just so remarkable. And he had never met a person in his life that had such utter confidence in God. And then he said this, "I can only congratulate you on this countryman of yours who lived as a saint and died as a hero. I say with certainty that this simple man is the only saint that I ever met in my entire life." How many times has anybody in your life, from your family, your friends, ever questioned you or challenged you because you come to church Sunday after Sunday after Sunday? I mean, who could be more upset about the struggles and difficulties that are going on in our church today than you? But what is the prophetic stand that is required of each and every one of us because we have chosen to stay, because we have chosen not to leave the church, but to stay? Is it to really be a beacon of Christian life here in Johnstown, to invite all, to ignite all, to seek to be intentional disciples of Jesus Christ? I mean, if you're a prophet, you have to take a stand. And if you take a stand, you are going to cause some division somewhere along the way. To take a stand with Jesus like Jeremiah did was to be hated, to be judged, and to be treated in a remarkably harsh way. To take a stand like in the second reading is to really, really struggle. And to take a stand with Jesus like in the gospel today is to find division even in your own family. When it comes to Franz Jägerstätter, you either were for him or you were against him. When it comes to Jesus Christ, either you're for him or you're against him. There can't be any way, given the way in which he chose to live. So let me say this to you. If you have never, ever in your life caused any division, any hostility, because of your Catholic faith, what kind of a low-level Christianity is that? Is it really even living as a Christian? If you've never suffered for the truth, if you've never taken a stand, if you are not out there in the world saying, yeah, I'm a Catholic. I'm a Catholic. And I want to change and reform my church. If that's never happened, and you sort of blend in kind of nicely out there, is it possible that somehow we only embrace a piece of the truth? Maybe the piece that makes us comfortable. And in that, we've missed and lost the whole thing.